Once again, it's the 30th of June. This is Tools for the Times. We're on Group 2 and Session 3, and tonight is Breath, Words, and Voice. This is Mark Stanton Welch, and I'm happy to be here. I see that I'm having a little trouble talking here because I've been hanging around with teenagers and actually younger kids for a whole week, so I have a different frequency going on, and I still haven't moved on from that, but here it is. I'm going to go ahead and use my solfeggio chimes here just to set it a vibrational intention. Vibrational. So that is. Sounds great when you're standing right under it like I am. I'm not sure how much that translates over the phone, at least in the physical realm, but the intention is certainly out there and sending you all kinds of good energy from that particular frequency. So, putting these three elements together is an essential piece. Because of what we've gone through so far as looking at our transition and how things are shifting in these times, how we started to see how this is not just a random place where we are, that so much of it all of it actually is interwoven and intertwined and synchronistic and rhythmic and interactive. And in no ways are we an isolated element of that, as we're beginning to see. We looked at process of self-creation, of how we can keep ourselves in our greatest place of power and presence, and how to keep that in a flowing process. We looked at getting clear from the energetic past, which is somewhat of an ongoing process. Again, every one of our lessons, every one of these sessions is about clearing debris. It's about reawakening and knowing, a deep inner knowing that has been implanted in you in a very gentle and pleasant way, and in the original design. We looked at multidimensional living to take ourselves out of what we might perceive as the rut of the earthly domain, when we realize that we are in no way limited by the forms that things are in, and that we do have access and capacity to move out of that at any time. We reaccessed and opened up a relationship, and hopefully it's a developing relationship and a nurturing relationship with your own inner child self, who is so excited because the fireworks are coming in just a few days. That's always a wonderful child time, the oohs and ahs. And then once the child was open, we started to look at how emotion moves from that little being and how important it is to that child self and how important it is to us. It's like the lubricant of life. It gives us the smooth energy to move with the ever-changing vibration that is going on within us at any given time. Once we had that foundation and we applied and became familiar with and hopefully are using through awareness and action the cosmic laws, and then finally, two times ago, we looked at the idea of ascension, which took us completely out of body and completely into another land that actually included where we are. And so it began to stir, and it was delightful that in the stirring, what began to happen for some was that some things were being moved. And some perspectives were being brought up, and some of those were shared with me, and because of that, we did a review, which then led to the time at the camp where we had the time off. So here we are picking up again. And the breath and the voice and the words are very foundational to, obviously, to us being a living, breathing organism in this planet who is capable of communicating, capable of self-care, capable of self-healing. The breath, the voice, and the words that we selectively use are potent, potent, potent. And it is up to us now in the foundation that we've created to begin to specifically start working with these elements. So let's look at them one at a time first, and then we'll begin to put them together towards the end of the call. Breath is life. Breath gives us life. We sustain life through the breath. The first thing we do when we enter this dimension is to breathe. The breath is the bridge between worlds, between dimensions. It holds the frequency of the spiritual life before incarnation to allow us to catch glimpses of it until we fully remember and reclaim it. The nourishing spiritual life force found in the air we breathe is termed prana. The prana contains the spiritus, the blueprint of the divine that unifies with the physical to birth a multidimensional being, breath after breath after breath. So with that in mind, we have to realize that breathing is an essential element that gives us the moment. We can get by without water for a while. We can get by without food for quite some time. As I've been seeing, as I've done juicing all this time, the things I thought that were sustaining me weren't necessarily needed. And what I found was the life force that I gained by juicing and getting down to the raw nutrients was more energetic and more vitalizing than anything that I'd had before. And in some ways, it was less gratifying because of my own personal needs around certain foods that were comfort for me. But as I stepped out of that, I began to see that the vitality that came from getting things down to their raw, almost their essential nutrients was a potent process, and I've sustained that. And as a result of that, it has changed how I am in my body, and it allows me to be very different. And that's starting to show up in some of this information that's coming through and some of the ways that I am in the world as well. But the breath itself, we aren't able to get along very long with it. What is it, about a minute? For some people, 2 minutes? Before we actually start to succumb to the fact that oxygen is not feeding and keeping alive the elements within us. Is it that when we get starved for oxygen that the brain gets impacted very quickly and the brain cells start to die because of their nourishment not being there? So isn't it ironic that historically we have learned as well as pretty much been taught? I don't recall in kindergarten the lessons on deep breathing, nor did I teach those at the time when I was working with children. We certainly had an awareness about the power of the breath, and we invited people to relax, and I invited the kids to relax by taking a deep breath, but it didn't go beyond that. The fact that it hasn't been taught is a testimony to, well, we'll just call it a grand oversight on behalf of 2,000 years of culture. But the point now is that the breath is vital, the breath is essential, and we can consciously begin to use our capacity to breathe in ways that will empower us beyond what we even thought were possible. Now, already we've gone through a few of the breathing techniques that I'm going to work with tonight, so some of them will be review, and a couple are going to be expanded. The point of even doing the review is to get us more familiar with it so that we can start using these things. Having been trained from the point where we took our first breath, and in that process, as a child, as an infant, breathing in and breathing out in a connected circle until it was interrupted by the moments of living and the admonishments and the interruptions that occurred from those around us, which incidentally began the process of us holding energy, which began the decay and the movement towards dis-ease that many of us have gone through in many variations. At the very least, it began to compromise and rob us of our vitality and our ability to be fully in our whole being. The breath really and truly has the capacity to bring us back to a place where we are reconnected with ourselves on very deep levels, and it will bypass the intellect, it will bypass the training, and bring us back to kick the, to turn the system on again. And it happens, but we've been sort of trained to become suspicious or to hesitate or to even fear certain elements that happen when we start to do breath work. people get afraid when they start doing too much breath work and they start doing things. Well, we already know and we've established that what begins to happen is that the emotion that has been trapped and held in place because the breath was interrupted begins to move. And this in itself becomes a source of the discomfort. And the issues themselves start to reveal themselves, whether it's through a mental process, through an emotional, through a sensory process, through a sensation process. It begins to get our attention. And already we've been numbed out to the point that we don't want to feel, nor do we want to have sensations in the body. It's as if we were taught that being numb was the ideal. And the breath does something far beyond maintaining the status quo of numbness. The design of the lung itself is set up so that the greatest volume of the lung is actually at the bottom. And yet we have been taught and seen, and we have seen others do it, and have experienced the capacity of breathing in the top part of the lung. In other words, gulping and grabbing air in order to take action. And especially, again, this is review to some degree, those who have grown up in Western cultures who are about doing and taking action and creating and making things happen, typically have learned to gulp air and grab it to deal with what's in front of them. And they take it on a short gulp and a grasp, and then next thing you know, they're grabbing another one because they need more air and more oxygen. Whereas in Eastern traditions and more uncivilized, quote-unquote, cultures, the breathing is more to the abdomen, and it's slower and it's deeper. There are distinct variations that happen as a result of the type of breathing that is going on. I got this from a book, and right now I'm forgetting it. It was a companion series that I picked up in the late 70s and early 80s. It was about breathing. It was about, one of them was about relaxation, I guess, and the other was about meditation. The one on breathing had a section that I referred to since then because it was very powerful and meaningful to me at the time. And here's what it said. I'll give you the name of the person and the resources when I write them up. So-called normal breathing is 16 to 18 breaths per minute. Ideal normal breathing is more like 11 to 13 breaths per minute. The faster you breathe, the less you feel. Until at 26 beats per minute, you lose the capacity to feel pain. Your blood heats up and your ego shuts down to the point that all feelings and body sensations disappear. Great feats of strength and immunity to being hurt occur in this state. So when you supercharge with the product, the life force, what you're capable of doing is beyond what you would consider normal. And the image comes to mind of the woman who comes out into the garage and the husband has been under the car and the jack has fallen down and he's trapped underneath, and she just goes over, takes a bunch of deep breaths and gets ready and lifts up the car. It has happened more and more, more than we realize, these kinds of things where someone gets into like a superhuman energy by supercharging the breath. The compromise to this is that we lose feeling. That's the benefit, but it's also the cost. To lose feeling is to continue to numb out. And too many in our culture, including me and many others, maybe even you, have spent at least a portion of our life pretty numbed out about what was going on. And it seemed like the less we experienced and the less we let that energy in, the more smooth things were. But actually, and I use this analogy a lot, we were literally just leaves in the stream, caught in an eddy. And what seemed familiar, what was familiar, was us just staying in the same old place. Sooner or later, the process of evolution, the process of the constant change that's in this dimension, the process of the constant vibration catches up with that model. And it forces us out of what seems comfortable. The longer we hold to something that's comfortable, the more we're possibly setting ourselves up for great discomfort. the more we are able to flow through the breath, through action, through mind, through body, through spirit, we find that we engage life and we walk hand in hand with it, which then reveals so much more to us. So the reason to paint the picture right now is to realize that there are certain paradigms and parameters and beliefs about breath and about the way it's supposed to be done. The influx of yoga and Eastern techniques has really impacted Western culture because of the deep inner need to live differently. Whether people realize that or not, it's one of the undercurrents of what's happening in these times. The greater awakening and the awareness that is happening is forcing so many of us to start doing things differently. And to slow down and to reduce the amount of stress is a critical element, that, and that is done really through the process of breathing. And to continue on here, it says, at 3 even breaths per minute, the vibratory level of your body becomes so subdued and harmonized that all your delicate psychic perceptions, like intuitions, premonitions, and inspirations come through. Increasing your inhalation time and capacity increases your intake of prana. Extending the time you hold your inhalation in allows this vital energy to be completely separated from the air and stored in the solar plexus. Lengthening your exhalation time enables you to make more room for prana by releasing toxins and impurities in your body and lets you direct prana to your storage tanks. And this is complete meditation. The fellow's name is Steve Cravett. So it's interesting. And right before me in this particular source that I've got here, I'm looking at the model of the breathing mechanism. So we realize that it's based upon certain elements. If you start from the top, you have the nasal passages, and then you have the mouth. Both lead to the trachea, the windpipe. That is the entryway into the lungs. Once the lungs, the air reaches the lungs, you have the alveoli and the air sacs that are in there. And in the process of the blood moving through there, the exchange process takes place. This is just a physical process. We're not even bringing into mind the elements on the next dimensions in the energy bodies that are occurring in this process of bringing in. Because essentially, just breathing through the normal mechanism isn't necessarily going to activate the pranic portion as opposed to the oxygen portion of things. So to be aware of what's going on in a pranic way is essential as well, because it allows us to then intentionally breathe in certain ways with a certain purpose in mind, which we will be looking at here in a few moments. So the energy lines, like the meridians, the acupuncture lines that move through the body are one thing. And then there are other things called nadis, and N-A-D-I-S, it's an Eastern term, not like naughty. Oh my, naughty. These are nadis. And they basically are channels through which the pranic energy runs. There is one moving up the left side and one moving down the right side in the typical lunar and solar fashion, the female-male energy. You've got one that brings the energy up from the perineum, and then you got one that takes it back down to the perineum. So there's this circular force going on, and I think it's, and right now I'm forgetting the two names of those different channels. But it's a process where there's so much going on, and the more we open to it, the more we realize how critical breathing is to us, not just for the sake of giving us the oxygen to be able to do the next thing. So I'm obviously laying a small foundation here as opposed to all the information that's available. I picked up a couple books on breathing that come from Eastern traditions, and my goodness, I mean, they're so intense in terms of the different things you can do and the nuances of the breath and the things that yogis, the things that holy men, the things that masters have practiced for a long, long time to bring about certain results are as predictable as the sun rising the next day, if you put the effort into them. Having said all of that, with the energy rising in these times, if we just begin the process of breathing more deeply and more slowly, we will activate all that's necessary for us to empower ourselves in the moments and reach a new place of awareness and action. Really, all we have to do is slow it down and breathe into the bottom of the lung. So when we look at breathing, we're looking at the abdominal breathing that's necessary to, as a regular way of doing it, to bring the air to the bottom of the lung. We've done this before, but let's do it again. You put a hand at the bottom of the, you put it on the solar plexus, and actually if you move it down a little bit, almost to the belly, because ultimately it's the belly that's coming out. The belly is extending itself, and in so doing, it activates the last element of the breathing mechanism, which is the diaphragm. By extending the belly out, it acts as a bellows, pulling down the diaphragm, which then sucks the air in, and then when we release, the air falls out, as if just collapsing under the weight of itself. So it's a very powerful and beautiful process that takes care of itself through the involuntary nervous system. And it is luckily and fortunately on some level that it is done where we don't have to pay attention to it. The challenge of that is that the behaviors that we learned about how to breathe shallow and quickly are also managed by that part of our nervous system, and so a pattern has been established. Fortunately, it doesn't take much to reawaken the pattern of the design, which is to learn to breathe slowly and deeply. So with the hand on the belly, as I pull the air in, right now it doesn't matter whether it's the nose or the mouth, although in some practices it matters greatly, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. So we breathe into the belly and breathe with the hand on there, so the hand moves out. We take in as much air as we can and hold it for a moment to allow the oxygen and the pranic forces to move and to integrate into the system and the cells on multiple levels, and then we release. It's much easier to release, and then we hold and breathe in again. And then hold, and then out. Right now, the reason we're interrupting the breathing and we're having the holds is to allow the actual life force and those things to move through. Those will assist in the cleansing and the clearings. Eventually, I believe that we can move back to the way we came into the planet, which was through the circular breathing. When our emotional, the pool of muck that we've held on to emotionally clears itself through the work that we're doing and through the intentions we're laying down and through the support energy of the cosmos, we can slip easily back into a circular breathing where we are really in a process of pulling it in and then releasing energies that we perhaps have experienced in the moment, and things stay on an even keel where we are cleansed as well as nourished and energized, all in the process. Not many are there yet, because there's still a lot of that toxic debris laying around within us, which is why we're doing the work. So knowing that you're breathing to that place in you, it is essential that we continue to breathe to that place. And so I'll reintroduce three types of breathing that we had done, and then I'm going to add two, possibly three more here over the next, say, 10 minutes. The three types of breathing we did, one was for relaxation, one was for energizing, and one was to support the movement of emotional energy that is rising up, to clear it and cleanse it and to push it along or to enable it to move through the system and out. We're very familiar with the idea of relaxation breathing because it's controlled, it's focused on, and typically it involves, it goes around a series of a sequence of numbers. So if we breathe in for a count of six and then hold for four and then breathe out for six and then hold for four, what we've done is create a rectangular form of breathing that we can rely upon. So the idea here is to take our awareness as we go through these different forms of breathing and notice how your body feels. It's an interesting response that can begin to happen that you'll pick up in the process here. So and we've done it before, so you may be able to recall what went on. Chances are, as we've raised our energy, you're actually going to be able to do it and feel and be aware of a bit more, and perhaps even significantly more, of the sensation and what that brings to you. So here we go. We're going to breathe as far as the nose and mouth. The breathing through the nose is about relaxation. The breathing through the mouth is about energized. You gulp air through the mouth to get maximum energy to deal with the task before you. More often than not, breathing through like that is the ability to get enough oxygen so you can go ahead and lift that car off of the person that is underneath. So we're going to go ahead for this purpose and breathe in through the mouth. I'm sorry, through the nose. So we're going to breathe in for the count of six, hold for four, and then breathe out for six, and then hold for four. And we'll do that for a cycle of four. Okay, here we go. Breathe in. And hold. And out. And hold. And in. And hold. And out. And hold. And in. And hold. And out. And hold. And in. And hold. And out. And let go of that. So the control and the focus, what we're looking for in that kind of breath is to take the entire count on inhalation and exhalation to fill up and to let it out. In other words, when I start at the one, my lung is full just when I reach to the four. Controlling the inhalation and especially the exhalation is where the power lies. And ideally, we're going to do one more set. We're going to increase the number of the exhalation time. So we'll go 6, 4, 8, 4. And what we want to do is to control the exhalation so that the last bit of air is out at the last number 8. So, four breaths like that. So breathe in through the nose. Hold. Out through the mouth. Hold, in, hold, out, hold, in, hold, out. Hold. Last one in. Hold. Out. Hold. There you go. So check in to your own physical self. And I shared before, when I was doing the breathing work, it wasn't the breath work from the Groffs, Stanislavs or Steffi Groff, or I'm forgetting their names right now, but it was more through the rebirthing process with from Leonard Orr, where we would supersaturate the body with oxygen with the idea that eventually it would clear out the debris, and boy, did it. But there were times in the process of all this oxygen that the senses were so alive. I mean, it was better than any drug that I've ever taken. And the process of touch was just so fascinating because it opened up. And especially the hair and the skin all felt so incredible. So that's one of the things I notice when I do these kinds of breath. And in a sense, it's like the body is turned on in the sense of being open and active and receptive. I also noticed in the process, and maybe you did, when we went to the 8 as opposed to the 6, I was able to hold that for a lot longer. And what seemed like a bit of a challenge in letting it out the first time of the 6 with the 8, I had plenty more to probably move to a 10 and beyond. So here's the idea with this breath. Just notice your state, first of all, so you have some sort of testimony about what this breathing leaves you feeling like. And if your moments are stressed or if you find yourself in a difficult place, it's not really just a single breath, although that is helpful. It is a series of breaths over a period of time that's going to create the de-stressing that happens. Having said that, over time, the more you use the process and respond to stress with a relaxing breath, then the more you'll realize that just by starting a focused breath, your body will immediately respond to being in a state of relaxation. And this is the beauty of how the adaptability of the body and the way that the autonomic nervous system takes over and establishes that new pattern. So you're looking at the capacity to stay in a state of calmness and relaxation so that the moments of living don't overwhelm, and instead of reacting, you respond to them. Having said that, there are times when we have to have energy, when we need it to deal with what's in front of us, when the unexpected comes and we're responding to the unexpected, which is asking us and requiring that we have more vitality and more energy. At this point, we can do very much like the description said from Stephen Cravett, was that we take breaths fast. And yoga, especially the Kundalini yoga tradition, has the breath of fire, which is a very powerful process to energize us. So we're going to do it one time for 30 seconds, as opposed to working up towards a minute. And it's interesting because I said earlier that breathing through the mouth was about energizing, and yet in the breath of fire, it's breathing all exclusively in and out through the nose. So it's an interesting little seeming contradiction, but really it's not, because the nasal passages are related directly to the channels of the energies and the pranic force that move directly down and up through from the nasal to the perineum. So there is a connection here. It's more than we're going to go into tonight, but if it's interesting to you, go ahead and research it, because there's plenty out there on it, and not only research, but maybe you'll find something you can start to practice. So what it is, we're breathing quickly to the abdomen, and the abdomen, like a bellows, is pulling the air in and releasing, and it's almost forcing it out. So we're breathing in and out very quickly, and we're doing it for a period of 30 seconds. I'm going to set my handy phone here on the clock. So here we go. Breathe in and out. And there we are. What I notice most of all, that since I don't breathe like this very often, I find myself the rhythm of the breathing starts to stumble and fumble, like it's losing its capacity to stay in the rhythm. And that's really just the muscles themselves going, WTF, what's going on here? What are you doing? And obviously, the more I practice this, the more I'm capable of doing it. But notice, even though we did it for just 30 seconds, you can also begin to know that you can get into an altered state very quickly. But these altered states are not so distracting that you're not able to meet the task at hand. It actually sharpens the focus and sharpens the conscious self, so you're able to deal, and really opens up even creative elements as well. So once again, the breath is the foundation, and it's leading to the capacity to use the voice when the voice, through the use of sound that is sustained by the breath, then is we put words and communicate out into the world to not only connect with others, but to make manifest that which our intentions are. So this holy trio, we're still in the first one. We've still got some time on this. So here, let's go with a couple more. Now the connected breath as I breathe in and out through the mouth, in through the nose, out through the mouth. No pausing in between. In through the nose and out through the mouth. And in through the nose and out through the mouth. So we're going to do 10 of these. So that's the process. They are full breaths down to the belly. So you're going to keep doing the belly breath, and you're going to notice. And sometimes stuff comes up. Woohoo! Clear it out. Okay, so 10 breaths. And I'll do my 10, and then I'll use that as a regulation. And if you're going faster or slower, you just bring completion to yours. I'll start talking again once I've done mine. So here we are, connected breathing. And the idea here is that it moves and assists in the release of the energetic debris and the toxicity that's in us on an energetic level. Old emotions are processed. Old unspoken energies are released in this process, and it's guaranteed to work. It does what it's supposed to do, just as the others do. So here we go, 10 of these. So we're breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. Okay, that's 10. Dude, far out. Man, this one sends me to another dimension. But it's interesting. Everything just slows down. Everything just slows down, and like the senses themselves expand and they open up. I hear differently. I see differently. My sense of touch is huge. It's like I can begin to feel things outside of me, and I can feel the energy coming off these houseplants that are in here. So this is the beauty of this one, because it opens us up to more of who we are. So obviously you can use either any of these three for multiple reasons, but they are very specifically useful for the specifics of stress reduction, relaxation, energizing, and then cleansing and clearing emotion. However, you can use them for other purposes. And obviously, the more you do them, the longer you do them, the more you reach the state, and more often than not, you create a situation where you maintain and perpetuate the state. Okay, so now we want to do one called a cleansing breath, because what typically happens in the way that we're used to breathing is that we don't let out all the air, and we start to get stale air at the bottom of the lung. And we start to get, and it reduces the capacity of the oxygen as well as the pranic force to come in, because we have a limited capacity in the lung. It's akin to having the lung fill up with fluid. Although we don't sense it as such, the lung capacity is diminished in the same sort of way. So what we want to do here is basically through the nose or the mouth, although the nose is pretty potent for this one, we're going to take a deep breath in, and then through the mouth we're going to do a series of expulsions. Obviously you get some tooting that goes on there, at least in that one, because I was forcing it out. And I push to the bottom, and then when I feel like I've reached the last bit, I do it one more time. By squeezing in the abdomen, and it forces any air that's at the bottom of the lung to release itself. So let's start with just a couple of these, too. So we're going to breathe in deeply and then force it out. And then you breathe back in. And you might find that your capacity for air to come in has increased. And then out. Okay. Now, this sometimes can get you into that state where you start to feel that feeling like you're going to pass out because you're forcing the air. It's kind of like, what is that breathing called? Can't remember, but I remember doing it in a gas station, a Shell station in Santa Barbara on the way to concerts. Me and my friend John would go in there and we'd hyperventilate. That's what it was. One of us would breathe and then the other holds your breath after really super oxygenating, and then you push on the lung, you push on the chest, and the next thing you know, the person is doing it is lying on the floor there going, whoa, far out. Who knows why we did such things? But it was just an altered state. It was an opportunity to explore some of the nature of the body. Now, that wouldn't happen if I didn't have a bunch of stuff that I'm storing within me. So the overwhelm that occurs is a result more of the debris that I had in there. And at that age, there was a lot. So right now, if you start to get a little bit lightheaded, go back to what you would consider your normal breathing, but I would still do it deeply. What causes the lightheadedness is the forcing that's going on at the end when you force the air out. So I would really, if you are subscribing to the idea of speaking the unsaid at the end of the day over the toilet bowl and then flushing it down, why not add to that process just a couple cleansing breaths that will allow you to push out, and before you go to sleep, then you have the full capacity of the lung to support you. I have a feeling that would make a huge difference in your capacity to have safe and restful sleep, sleep, sleep. So the only other one I want to bring back again is the pranic breath. The pranic breath is based upon the idea that we're bringing a life force in specifically through a dimensional tube of about 2 inches that starts at the solar chakra above our head and moves straight down through the crown, through the third eye, right at the pineal or the pituitary gland, and then straight down through the throat chakra, through the heart chakra, then down through the solar plexus, through the sacral chakra, down through the perineum, straight down to the ground, and then into the earth star chakra. So it's a hollow tube through which the pranic force moves. Now, the pranic force is moving from above, and it's moving from below. But what we're going to do first is to pull it from above 3 times, then pull it from below 3 times, and then we'll do simultaneously with both of them meeting at the heart chakra. And what this is doing is empowering and activating and opening up the greater heart chakra. And in this process, we are initiating a deeper openness and a greater capacity to be in our wholeness by doing this. And regular practice of this has brings about a very powerful state. Okay, so first of all, we're going to breathe to the heart. And as we breathe in, we're going to pull it down from the earth, the soul star above us, straight down through the tube. So you just have to visualize or even sense the air, the pranic, the force, the vibration moving straight down through to the heart. And then as we exhale, it moves right back out up the top of the tube. So breathe in. And then out. Sending that up right back up the pranic tube. And again, in, to the heart, and then the heart expanding, and then we let it out, back up through the tube. And I invite you to, if you can, sit up straight as you do this, so that the channels are open. And again, breathe in. And then out. And now bring your awareness down to your feet and to the 18 inches below at the earth star. And we're going to breathe into there. It'll come up through the tube, straight through the perineum, up through the sacral, the root, the sacral, and then the solar plexus to the heart. So breathe in now. And then out, back through, down into the earth. You're visualizing the movement of that energy. And again, moving to the heart, and then out. And one more time in. Again, you're bringing the earth frequency and the earth energy and the sustenance and power from the earth to the heart area. And so it's a different vibration. So now what we're going to do is simultaneously pull from above and then through the earth portion of it as well. And then it all meets in the middle to expand in a spherical way the energy of that heart chakra. So we'll do it three times. Breathe in. And out. And then in. And then out. And then in. And then out. All right. Whew. What is most important, just in review very quickly, and we move on to the voice, is that the pace of the breath and the depth of the breath are the critical elements, plus the intention. Perhaps you've seen an additional, the pranayamic, it's called the pranayama, which is the alternate nostril breathing, which is really another relaxation breath, but it also can really, really enervate and activate those two channels of the pranic energy moving through us. And we're not going to do that this time because I'm realizing we need to move on to the other elements here. But look that up. You can find all kinds of information online for about different types of breathing. But really, if you can, make a habit on a daily basis to do one of these kinds of breath and call them up as necessary. The sooner you make it a regular part of your moments, the more powerful things will be. Indeed. All right, so we've already established that the breath is the foundation for the voice. When you start looking at the mechanism for the voice, it involves some of the same elements as the breath, but then it adds its additional elements. Obviously, the lung and everything related to the breathing process and breathing in through the nose or the mouth, those are going to impact the resource that we have to sustain a sound and a tone. But what happens is when you begin to integrate the voice box, which has the vocal cords and all the muscles therein and related to it that are actually working with the air to force the air through a tube, essentially through a restricted tube, which then creates the tonality, which then also creates the pitch and the pitch of the actual sound. That's through the regulation of the actual vocal cords. And the regulation happens, they are basically like a V, and they come together like a V coming off of the hinge at the bottom. If you take your index and your middle finger apart and then you bring them together, what you've got is what's happening with the vocal cords. The more they are closed, the higher the pitch. So when you are singing, what's happening is there are nuances of those vocal cords happening through the musculature as well as the ligaments and everything, the tendons in there, that are all forcing these vocal cords to be doing this acrobatic dance that allows you to do these various pitches because of the closing or the level of opening of that particular mechanism. And that's only the beginning. That creates a sound. And what happens then is it moves into three different chambers. One, it's already in, although we do lose connection with it, which is the body itself, the body cavity, the chest, and all the organs, etc., within there, including the lungs and all of that. And then also the throat itself, the throat and the mouth. And then you have the sinuses and the cranium and the reverberation that occurs up in there. All those are necessary to give the voice a texture and a tonality and allow you to recognize the voice of Groucho Marx or Ella Fitzgerald. That's what gives it the elements. And what occurs in there is just a marvel. When all of those three dance together, when you start dealing with the harmonics and the tones that come out of all of this, it becomes very fascinating. The actual capacity to make language is based upon our ability to manipulate those mechanisms consciously. And so as a child, as an infant, what we're doing in the beginning is making sound. So all of that, which seems so fun and so playful, is really about, one, getting used to the mechanism. The other is to find out how language is going to come out of that by the actual influence of the language that's being heard, about where it's placed within that mechanism. So you know that when someone who's had throat cancer and has had the voice box removed, there used to be a gentleman who would come into one of the clubs I was playing, and he'd had this little vibrating. It created a vibration that he'd put up next to his throat, which would create the sound, and then he would just mouth the words. So it always was like this, that everything was sounding this very same way, because he wasn't able to use the vocal cords to actually create any intonation, or he wasn't able to make any kind of pitch. So his voice was just a monotone, but because of vibration, he was able to create the sound itself, and he was able to communicate. So being aware of the mechanism itself allows us to begin to rediscover what we've probably forgotten. Being under the influence of language and communicating, we have gotten lazy about the capacity of our voice, of our mouth, of our capacity to make so many different kinds of sounds. And this is where the voice is very, very powerful as an actual tool of healing. Because in one sense, what the voice can actually do is work intentionally down in the body itself to bring frequency and vibration to a particular organ to bring it back to a state of health by blasting away the debris. This is the capacity that only the voice has in terms of working on us in an internal way. There's a lot to talk about in relation to the voice and a lot of different ways to go with it. This is not about singing. It's about the actual sound of the voice. Let me look at a couple of the things I jotted down here. Let's go ahead and play for a minute. Because it's through that that we begin to realize that there's more going on than we thought there was. I know before in one of the calls I had you go from A to bring the voice down into the body. Let's review that and go back there, where we started with the A. Okay, it was going from A to A to A, A to A to A. And that starts out where the A is out in front, and it pulls as we change the shape of the mouth to bring the voice down into the body to the back of the throat, where it opens up and drops into the body to give it the girth and the depth. Again. The very act of opening your back of your throat up and the mouth wider to allow that ah to show up, that ah, and drop it into the body is a potent thing, because it gives you a connection, a very deep connection with not only your substance, but the earth itself. And it's as if it reaches down to the earth and pulls that strength and that capacity up, then that becomes the foundation of the voice. When you hear voices, you can hear in some ways where people have restricted themselves. The sound of the voice by design needs to include the body, needs to include the throat, and needs to include up in the nasal. But certain affectations have caused certain people to be focused in one area, perhaps out of profession or out of the retaining of information and debris within themselves, that have caused them not to want to go into the body. And so their voice becomes a little intense and harsh and perhaps nasally, because they don't want to go back down in there and dig up that debris. certainly singers, actors, etc., are called upon to use their voice in a variety of ways. But it's surprising how often you do the same thing in the course of a conversation. You speed up and slow down as you make contact with someone to basically solidify a point, perhaps, or to communicate a certain emotion that's going on. You'll use your voice in different ways. You'll use different pitches, different paces, different timings, and different placements within the mouth. And once you get used to how you can use that, you begin to realize just how powerful it is to actually use the voice for specific intentions, whether it be your own personal healing, or if you're in the process of being willing to work with someone else through their own process of healing, you can focus and send your voice as a healing tool and a vibrational tool to actually bring relief to certain areas, especially areas that are in pain. So we want to play a little bit here now that we've got the idea that we want to bring it back to the back. What I would like you to do is to create a sound, and we'll start with the vowels because the vowels contain the emotion because they have sustained sound. They allow the emotion to activate. And just like the chakras that start with the in the root and then go to ooh in the second and then to oh, in the third, to ah, in the heart, to eh, in the throat, to e, in the nose, or in the forehead, to the humming in the crown. All of these particular vowel sounds and phonemes will help you to, are worth playing with, because a lot begins to happen when you begin to change the way your mouth is with it. Let's take a sound like ah. Ah, and with my mouth open, it sounds this way, but as I start to move and change the shape of my mouth through the changing of the closing of the mouth or the changing of the lips, the changing of the placement of the tongue, I'm beginning to get different tonalities out of it. That's very fascinating. So, so I invite you to do that. You can hear what I'm doing here, but just see, this, it's almost an infinite variation of what you're beginning to do. And over in a moment, as you pay attention, you're going to start to hear different sounds start to come up out of that voice. So just taking the ah that starts as the ah and then just becomes a sound tube that you can play with. Also, the very actual where you are placing the voice, the sound, and your attention in the throat itself or in the mouth itself. A sound where I'm focusing on the back of the throat is like this, and as I bring it forward to the lips is going to take on a very different tonality, even though the back of the throat is still the same. It almost gets more clear and more precise when I bring my attention to what's called the front or the face. To the mask, I guess that's what it's called, the mask, when I bring it up there. So play a little bit more with that and just get the feeling of how it sounds. So use a different sound to start with. Tonality of the O sustains itself, but then I start working with that to create the variations on that. Now let's work with E. I hope you're able to do this in your position in the house where you are, where you have the capacity to do this. I know it's going to sound funny, but the next thing you know, everybody's going to be in there wanting to do it with you because it's so infectious, and it feels really good to the cells. It feels really good because you're actually doing some very powerful healing work on your own cellular structure right now with these kinds of variations, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Mm-hmm. fascinating. And that's, it's a lot more tension using that one. But what I'm noticing, it was very easy to move from the chest to the throat to the cranium in just these quick steps and through the use of that. This is really about exploration. I it may seem strange and it may be this, but the work that you're doing here and reacquainting yourself with your vocal mechanism is really opening up a lot of those awareness keys in there that are starting to reveal information and capacities because of the nature of vibration and sound. Because what we're doing here, when I go from a sound like ah to ah, what I'm starting to do is then access the harmonic structure of sound. And it's the harmonic structure of sound that gives its greatest healing capacity, because you're getting multiple frequencies at the same time. It's a predictable sequence that it goes, and it starts at your fundamental, which is the tone that I'm, oh, and the next thing I get is the octave above it, which is 13 steps above it, and I hear the low, and then I hear the octave. So I hear two sounds then, and then as I start to restructure the way my mouth is, I may start hearing three, maybe four, maybe five sounds. If you've ever heard the Tibetan monks do their chanting, they have learned and fine-tuned the capacity to activate a double octave down within their own belly, more or less, and then the throat, and they've got a multiple sound going on that's very fascinating, mysterious, and very potent. But you're capable of doing almost the same thing except the lower octave until you work at it. So take a sound like, I'm doing is squeezing the mouth, and I'm working the tongue in there, and the tongue sometimes goes up against the roof of the mouth, and sometimes it's pushed against the teeth. It's doing all kinds of things, and sometimes it's right in the center doing its own thing, like do an O sound, but bring the R in. In the information I'm going to be giving you, I've included a series of exercises to work with what's called overtones, which is what these are. So if you say a word like you and slow it down, beginning to hear the nuances of it and how the harmonics are coming in. Those are potent, potent frequencies that you're doing there. So what you're learning to do is to work with the overtones. And the overtones themselves can be the vehicles that you apply toward whatever malady you're going through. And by working with the voice, what you're doing is just taking not only the fundamental, but now adding the sound to it, the real the expanded sound, the harmonic sound. More, using the word more, you're exaggerating it, so you have more, and then I can regulate the pitch. So you're beginning to hear that all these tonalities are suddenly available to you. Ringing, using ringing, ringing. If you've ever been to Mongolia and or heard the Tuvan singers, This is really, they're exaggerated, and they've mastered the art of using harmonics, and it's part of their singing structure. It's part of their popular music, where they bring in these, it's kind of like a Jew's harp, Jaws harp, sometimes called a jew's harp, sometimes called a jazz harp. Now, the thing is we don't use these sounds in our normal language. Part of the process of learning other languages is to begin to use the placement of the sound and the tech, you know, to accommodate this new kind of language that you're working. Like there are certain things like the guttural sound that we don't use, but in some of the Germanic languages, it's right there. And some of the nasal that is in the French language, we don't use here so much. And in some ways it sounds annoying. But really, to look at it beyond just a placement of where the language is coming from in terms of the people, look at it for its sound capacity. See, the breath already, the use of what we're doing here has brought my breath to another level where I'm actually able to sustain tones even farther than I was when I sat down here. So by the very act of exploring, what you're doing is you're empowering yourself in to have a greater lung capacity, to be able to sustain a tone. You're also working with it by paying attention. You actually are working on creating a better singing voice because you're able to identify and feel how you can move sound to actually access pitch. So let me see if there's anything else I wanted to say on voice, because it leads to language. The thing with voice, let me say this, is there are certain ways specifically to use it for healing. And when we do chakra work, we use the sounds to actually focus and entrain the chakra itself to bring it back to a place of balance. There are also things called seed sounds that are coming specifically from, by definition, from the Eastern traditions, alam, vam, ram, that have to do with the particular chakras. But there are actual phonemes that are the basis of all languages, that because that's what the mouth is capable of creating. And so you'll find that there are variations of certain tonalities and certain phonetics that are used to create all languages, like the sound ah. Ah is occurring in some form or another in all of the languages. Even though it may be more of a nasal push, or it may be a more of a guttural or a throaty push or a deep sounding sound like that, you're still using the same building blocks. And because of that, we have this capacity to impact ourselves as well as others through our own voice. And this is one of the beautiful elements out of it. The idea of toning, when we use the voice to actually clear out the moments of living, where I run sirens up and down my auric field to knock off and to shake off any debris that I picked up during the course of the day, it's a powerful use of that voice. It's also a powerful use of the voice to... I just lost track because I was moving down the road to something else. So we ran sirens. Oh, we also have, again, toning isn't just running sirens. Toning is about using the voice to tone or to intentionally send sound to parts of the body. So let's say I have a situation where I've got a thing going on in one of my thumb joints here, and it's a little bit painful, and I have to work with it. And so what I can do is bring it up to my mouth, and I'm going to just intuit some... And what I found, you saw me move around there, but I found a particular pitch that it caused me to have a feeling of sensation in the area where I'm having the difficulty. So, and then all I'm doing is changing the phonetic or changing the tonality of it so that I can find what is going to work to speak to this area, which basically has some congestion in it. So I'm working, and by God, I'm healed. Well, I'd like to think so, but actually, honestly, it does feel a little different. Nice. So this is the basic of what we have the capacity of doing. So say you have an ache or a pain in your body. Go ahead and you know, just intend your voice to go there. You know that if it's in the body itself, you can use the phonetics we use for the chakras. If it's a really low thing down at, say, the lower intestine, I got that. That got right down at the lower part of the spine and then the front. That was almost a... Yeah, that was good. So you can begin to feel, and all you're doing is paying attention, because it's just vibration you're starting to pay attention to. So why not give it a shot with this sound? The alternative to the kind of toning that we're doing is to let the issue or to let the place speak of its own and to release sound. And this is way more powerful than words. So let's say that my thumb here, I gave it some attention and it started to give me a talking to. But so I'm just going to let it. That was pretty intense. It sounded like it was afraid, like there was some fearful stuff going on there. It was really, really interesting. Now, I'm not here. My mind is going all over the place with this. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? But all I'm doing is noticing results. I'm noticing how it feels and the level of pain that is there after I've done the work. So I either send sound to it and intuit what I'm going to use as far as pitch and the actual phoneme, or I let it speak. The actual capacity to let it speak is way more powerful. Well, maybe not way, but it definitely is, because it allows the stuff to get out, and it moves outward. The other is sending an energy in to break the pattern, which then leaves debris. So you want to have to clear that out consciously and intend it to move. But the idea of letting something just make sound is a very powerful thing. And again, as we move into words now, we realize that words themselves, because they carry meaning, they carry history, they carry agreed upon elements from the culture, that when we start to use words instead of just raw sound, we start to bring in what I'll call baggage. And that baggage itself is a very, very potent force. So let's look at the idea of a word now. So a word is based upon having breath as foundation, moving through the vocal mechanism, and then I am actually forming it through the vocal mechanism to make a specific sound that is translated as a word, and because it's been taught and because it's been heard and agreed upon, it has a certain meaning to it. When I slow down my talking, you begin to hear how sound is making the words. It's really fascinating. And what we've grown to be accustomed to, the sound of a voice and language, is really something remarkable going on. The thing I want to do mostly with words, we all know how they're made. I invite you to go ahead and do that exercise where you're actually slowing down, say, reading a passage, or you're speaking lyrics of a song or speaking a poem. Slow it down and just feel language as sound and feel how it is coming out. See, the meaning gets attached. The vibration is there anyway. We're looking to feel that vibration. That's where the magnificence is in that. Okay. Okay, what begins to happen in relation to sound, and then as it turns into words, we start creating certain patterns that will support our energetic condition through the words we use. We start making statements. We start self-discounting. We start using words that have a lower vibration. All of these are designed to keep an energy in place. Consciousness will invite us to lift out of that and begin to use language and sound in different ways. Then this brings us to the notion, and it's a bit of a New Age cliche, but it's powerful, despite the fact that it's become a cliche, that there are certain words that are disempowering. Energetically, by the very nature of them, but mostly by the meaning of them. Let me take that back, because energetically, by the sound of it, I don't think that is doing. It's more the meaning that we've attached to it. So when we take a word like should, so taking it from its birth to its actual maturity as a word, we begin to find that as a basically newborn word, it is just a sound that's being manipulated. The meaning that's given to it is one that is carrying the negative or the lower frequency energy. So energy doesn't go away. It transforms. When I use certain words, I set forth certain limitations based upon the attached meaning to the word itself. Words spoken energetically do not go away. When I speak something in a very different frequency out of an intention of an emotion, et cetera, or curse someone, what I have done is put an energy out and a field out that really doesn't go away, but it's bound by law to come back to me. So it starts to give credence to why it has relevance for us to monitor our language, monitor the words that are spoken. Because the language itself is built upon the phonemes, which then create the words, which then create the sentences, which create the ideas, which create the communication. So we move from the simplest element out to a meaning being taken. Now, if we all agreed upon a certain meaning of a word, that would be fabulous. And in some senses, we do. A word like cat, we pretty much all have a reference for it. But the thing is, you start introducing the capacity for us to change the intonation or the way we say it based upon emotional energy. Then things start to get tricky. For example, if I said the words, I love you. Now, if I just say, I love you, that's one thing. But if I say, I love you, that has a whole different meaning. Or, I love you, has a different meaning. I'd love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Okay, so you see, the words are the same, but the intention, the meaning, the emotion, the intonation of the voice, and if you saw me, the body language, the ways I'm putting the emphasis on the word and the syllables themselves and the way I'm using my body to do it, all convey information. And so the word itself becomes, in a sense, one of the least usable elements because it's how it's said, the tone of voice that's used, the circumstance that has way more information in it than the actual word itself. This is where communication is either successful or it falls apart. So it's a lot to think of in the process, but it's powerful when we begin to put all the pieces together and realize that how I choose to say something, not just the words themselves, but the delivery, are more impactful than actually the words themselves. So we want to put all those pieces together to do that. That is one thing to keep in mind when I'm working with words. So there are certain words, and the words basically are, let me see if I have a list here. We already know that should is one of the words that would be advisable to get out of the vocabulary. We also know that try is another one. And we also know that can't is another one. So for now, just those three words in themselves are words that disempower. When I should do something, it's because I'm feeling I'm being told to and I have to do it for other reasons beyond my own choice to do so. When I try, it means I can give the least effort to something and go, well, I tried, and then basically get nowhere from it. It's a weak word. It's a wimpy word. Throw it out. Can't is used way too often to justify our choices for not doing something we don't want to do. I can't. Come on over. I can't. let's go down to the beach. I can't. You know, unless you're physically unable to do so, can't is one of those words that is pointless. What's the point of using it? It's more honest and more powerful to say, you know, I'm choosing not to go. I'd rather not go to the beach right now, or I'd rather not come over. I'd rather not do this. I'd rather not do that. I'm choosing to not do that. So what are the words you put in the place? Choose. When you say, I choose, you literally are putting energy into motion that begins to gather that which is necessary to make it manifest. Choosing is an act of will. It's a third chakra element that puts things into motion and action and moves things forward and moves things outward. Why not use a word like choose? It sounds a little contrived at times, or it's, you know, people aren't used to hearing such a thing unless they use it another way. They're used to using, you know, I tried, or I can't do it, or, you know, maybe they'll say I won't. But that's not that often. So you've got a word like I choose, and then you've got the actual words of manifestation, I am. When I use the words I am basically telling the universe that whatever follows those words must be put into motion, and it must come to me. I am sick of this. And then the thing is, as you wish, as you wish. Okay, so I'll include a list of some of those words. You already know what they are. The words yes and no, start using them more often. Too many people don't use no because they caretake others. They don't want to ruffle the feathers. They don't want to cause any discomfort or anything. So they do stuff that they don't want to do. Perhaps this is you. I certainly know I have. I sure don't do that much anymore. I'll at least be clear about where I'm coming from, and then make a decision on that, and at least communicate to whoever's involved that that's the case. There's another thing here. There's two things I want to do, and I want to end with one. So I have about 3 minutes to do this thing. I've stumbled upon something called switch words. Switch, S-W-I-T-C-H. You see, the baggage of words is one such thing. So what this person has done has gone through a fairly lengthy process to research, to put it together, to research and to work with the idea of switch words. They are single words and a combination of words that carry a specific meaning that create results. For example, if my life is in chaos and things are flopping around and things just aren't in alignment, he says say the word adjust, and the very word itself, adjust, creates balance in your life, and it helps handle conflict or unpleasant situations. The word be will help achieve peace and good health. Be. Be. You see, instead of all the extra stuff, there are just specific words that carry a powerful frequency. Bring. If you're talking about manifestation, universe, bring. It's like we're just talking in very short sentences, and yes, we are. We're just cutting to the quick, as they say. If you want to expand your limits, you say the word bubble. Bubble, and the implication is that everything's just expanding out and moving outward. I love these things. Another one, to get rid of emotional and physical pain, you say change. Change. You've used the word cancel when you said, oh, I feel like shit. Oh, cancel, cancel, cancel. So you have to cancel it. Sorry for my French. We'll delete that in the recording. Well, the word circulate, it's an end to loneliness, and you feel at ease with people. It's like you walk into, it's like you're going and you're setting your program. You walk into a place and you go, circulate, and there you go. You've changed the energy a little bit. See, the point is, we could sit here and analyze this and go, that is a bunch of crap. Or we could go, hey, why not? Why not? To increase endurance for physical or mental tasks, continue. Use the word continue. To help you make money, count. Count. Bring. Count. Bring. Count. Bring. Count. So I'm going around saying these words, and what it's telling the cosmos is to respond to these elements and to do it. Why not test it out? I'm just looking through the list here. I have about 20 of them. I'll include them in the the information you'll get here. This probably won't be available until Thursday. To begin and progress in anything, go. Go. If you're having trouble getting out of bed in the morning, say, go. Get up. Go. Next thing you know, you've got energy to do it. Ends procrastination, use the word now. Now. I think you can begin to see the power of these kinds of things. And I invite you to take one or two of these and just start using it and see what it does. You see, once you start using it, then you start paying attention. And once you start paying attention, you start paying attention to things that are different than what you used to pay attention to. See, we're putting into application those elements, these foundations that we're creating. And this is where it starts to get juicy. The breath. God, the breath is such a powerful thing. The voice. To heal, to empower, to clear, to cleanse, to inspire. It's all there. And then the words. When you choose to be selective with your words. I don't know if you remember a movie. I think it was the last movie that, the heck was his name? The movie was Being There. Peter Sellers. I think it was Peter Sellers. He was Chauncey the gardener, and he was a gardener and in Washington, D.C., and he just saw everything in relation to gardening. And he started saying these things like, you know, in the winter things must, you know, go within, and then in the spring they blossom. And then the president started using him as a confidant, and he started using the ideas in his speeches. It's the power of a few words well placed. You know, we all get tired of a talker or being a talker. Look at me, talking all through this time. But to talk with nothing in mind, just for the sake of talking, is a condition that really ought to be looked at. Because in a sense, running from the silence is not worth it anymore. It just isn't. Sound is more powerful, and it is a very useful tool that can allow us to create the words in the exact way that we want to put them out, to intend and create that which we have as our intention, and to put it into motion. So the last element here, and we're just going to be able to do this for 2 or 3 minutes, is to use what I've referred to before as light language. Now, light language, again, is like speaking in tongues. What's happening now in these new times is that some of these things that have been around for quite some time are being brought into new frequencies and new light and new understanding. So what a thousand Assembly of God holy rollers have been doing through the eons is actually a potent process that actually, when we step out of the framework of me talking to my chosen God, what it does is it begins to expand a capacity to communicate in way, way different ways than ever before. So for like 30 seconds here, I'm just going to go ahead and do this. And what I do is I just let whatever happen, happen as it comes out of my mouth. And it's sound, it's phonemes, it's characters that come up. They seem to spontaneously just come out of nowhere. So here I go. Sounds pretty weird, I'm sure. If I was stoned, I'd be having a ball. But here's what's happening, according to this information. There are, you see, we talked about this in the dimension, the multidimensionality, that as we get farther up into the layers, as we get farther up into these dimensions, language, sound, I mean, things start to change. That meaning is carried in symbols, and meaning is carried in sounds itself that are not language, but they carry the information that vibrationally opens up the awareness within it that we can basically understand. And so this is like the forerunner to this new capacity of communicating, perhaps. And if not, why not? What it does do is actually allows us to exercise our vocal mechanisms to trust the moment and to flow, and it gives us the flexibility to go where we go. And the variations of sound and pitch that we're using are actually doing work on our cellular structure. Assuming that nothing is by accident, that our higher self is really leading us into a very potent place, trust this and play with it. So for we're already at 32 here, but for 2 minutes, I'm going to, if you're in a position where you can do it, and even if you're not, do it. Why not? So we're just going to go for 2 minutes. The idea is to go for five, and if you decide to start doing this, 5 minutes a day doing this, I think is going to create some significant changes for you that I really cannot predict. So I'm going to do it for 2 minutes. I may hear some phone hang-ups during this time, but I'm not going to stop. Here I go. Wow, that was fun. And as I started doing it, I started to just, I picture myself in the places that I was going. I had some characterizations there that just came out of nowhere, like an old Native American man, an old wise man in the mountains. There was just space beings, you know, God knows what. But it was just sound. But what was beautiful is that it allowed it to just flow and to move, and it helps really build my trust and builds my flexibility in my will center, so that definitely impacts that. So tonight, you got a host of things that you can be doing here in the next week or so. And I really invite you to do that. We started with breath, we moved into voice, and we ended with words, and then we ended with the power of sound and the power of the voice, using the breath to communicate on much deeper and more radical levels than we've allowed before. Stepping outside of the bounds of language, I think, is a relevant tool in these times. It may just be between you and you right now. It may be between you and your higher self, or you and your connections. But eventually, I think some of this stuff will start to create new inroads into ways that we are interacting with one another. Don't know. So I'm off to Kansas City this week, and Saturday, and I will head out there, and I will be there through the week. Now, on Tuesday night, I have a concert, but it's at 7 o'clock, and that is at 5 o'clock Pacific time. I have a feeling I will be done. So I'm going to propose that we, if possible, roll this back till 8 o'clock, and then I believe I am sure to be done. If there's a problem with that, I will let you know. But I do believe that we can have a call, and if you're able to come on at 8 o'clock, I'll send you all the information, and you can let me know if that's something that works for you. And I apologize, but this is what I'm doing to make my living, and sometimes I have to travel. And sometimes the circumstances are such, just like last week. And so summertime, there's a lot more stuff going on with camps and groups, et cetera. So there'll be a couple more times through the course of the summer where that will happen. But I will let you know. It is my intention to pre-record, but I have not been able to do that yet. And I apologize for that, but it's still my intention. We'll see what comes of that. And maybe that'll happen this week. So we'll be looking at next week. Self-nurturing. Now, I know we've looked at self-care before, but this is going to be a little bit of a different twist on it. So I invite you to show up with an openness and your arsenal of already established self-care techniques. So for tonight, we are done, and I appreciate you choosing to be here and to be a part of this. I think it's been a fascinating and potent session that will continue to give the more you use it. So those voices are not just idle elements. So work the breath, play with sound, and use it to respond to your body, to communicate with your inner child, to talk to the pains that come up, to help clear, and then select and choose your words powerfully to create that which you deserve and desire. And so it is, and so it is, and we will. I will stay on here for a little bit more time if there are any questions, comments, et cetera, et cetera. Otherwise, we are... Now. Okay. I guess that's it. Thank you so much. Blessings to you during the week. And we'll see you next week at 8 o'clock, if you can make that. Blessings. We are done now.